You have put a new song in my mouth. A song of praise. A sound that resonates, that all of heaven and earth may worship you. We tread the hills to meet with you, to see your majesty in all that surrounds us. For it speaks and displays the eternal God of ages, creator, author, victor. In love, you established an everlasting covenant with your people, and it's your love that captivates us. As children of the King, we rush in as waves unrestrained, overcome, overwhelmed, that the King crowned in glory and splendor would reach down to place a crown upon our heads. So we raise our banner, the banner we boldly stand under, the banner of Jesus Christ. From dusk to dawn, from age to age, your praise resounds in all the earth. Deliverer, Redeemer, ruler of an everlasting kingdom that cannot be shaken, we trust in the name of Christ Jesus, the only King, forever.
Welcome to Zion's Redemption Radio. This is Fundamentally Mormon. I'm your host, Mark Lichtenwalter. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can find this at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And the text will also be posted on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can also find the text and the audio to this radio program on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon and in the different Facebook groups that I am an admin of. Some of those groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, Latter-day Unity, and others. You can find the pages that I admin also on my Facebook wall. And if you enjoy this program, please friend request me or follow me and make me one of your close friends. We try to put out as many episodes as we can during the week. But I'm thankful for you to be here today. Let's get right into the reading. Today, we are going to be reading out of Ogden Kraut's books. You can find his books for free to read online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. Welcome to the program. Today is, well, hold on. I'll find out what the day is in a minute. I'm trying to get my phone to work here. It doesn't want to work. I've reset it a couple of times, and my cell phone service is crap today. So it's the ninth day of April 2021. Today we are going to be continuing on with the Romans Monogamy Law, Chapter 3 of the Holy Power, trying to wake up still. I'm tired. I've worked, I only worked 4 days this week because my van broke down when I was supposed to go to work on Saturday last week when we were coming back up from Moab. And I can actually see parts of the intake that I'm not supposed to see. That's how bad it broke down. It's pretty bad. Anyway, so, you know, 4 days, well, 4 nights. And that's probably part of the reason why I'm so tired right now, because driving nights actually is harder than driving days. I mean, there's things about it that are easier. I kind of have to deal with all these RVs and stuff that are running around all over the place that will run around all summer long. But in the wintertime, it snows more at night. It gets colder at night.
it ices up more at night. My coal, and I drive a coal belly dump semi truck that freezes in at night. But I don't like dealing with people. And ports of entry, the place where they the government weighs semi trucks, I have to deal with them because they don't run at night. MSHA, Minor Safety Health Administration, that likes to give drivers tickets for not putting a chalk under their wheel, even if they only step out. Like, this actually happened at the power plant down in Castlebell. A driver stepped down off of his step, put a ticket in a box that was right by his step, didn't even take his other foot off of the step, and then jumped back in the truck, and they gave him a ticket because he touched the ground without putting a wheel chalk under his wheel. I just drive at night. I'll drive at night. I've always drove at night. So, but no matter how long I've done this, I still am exhausted after a couple of days. And I'm going to drive tonight, too, because I took 4 days off last weekend because for 2 days I had to deal with trying to get my broke-down vehicle back up to Emory County. So, anyway, let's dedicate the program, and we'll get right into the reading, and hopefully everything. I put my cell phone in the window of my bedroom where I do my radio shows at, so it's kind of nice. When I'm sleeping during the daytime, the curtains are closed, and we've got these darkening curtains. It gets pretty dark in here. But when I open up my windows and I put the curtains to the side, what I'm looking out at right now is actually just a field, partly a field across the street that I own. And horses and cattle, and it's nice. Nice and peaceful, just the way I like it. So anyway, I think that opening the windows is probably a good idea too, because not only is my cell phone there where maybe hopefully you can get better cell phone reception, but I think that the light that your eyes gather in helps you wake up better. So hopefully it works. Anyway, and it's not that I'm mentally tired. It's that my body hurts, and I'm physically tired. And I kind of wish that I could, like, have a massage chair, or that Kim says are too expensive, or a hot tub would be nice. That might be nice. But you can't afford it. So anyway, it is what it is. All right, I'm going to dedicate the program. We'll get into the reading. Our Father in heaven, we come before thee in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ, and dedicate ourselves unto thee at this time that we may learn why monogamy became so popular in our culture, and learn the history of where these laws and these customs and traditions come about. We love thee, Father, and we ask for thy blessings to be upon us, that we may have the foundation to understand why things are the way that they are. We thank thee, Father, for Jesus Christ and for all that he has done for us in atoning, that we may come back into thy presence. We thank thee for the prophet Joseph Smith, for laying the foundation for Zion to be redeemed. And we thank thee, Father, for all of the many servants that are upon the earth today that are hearing thy voice and seeking thy face. We dedicate this time unto thee, and we do so in the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, even Jesus the Christ. Amen. I didn't even see how long this was. 22 minutes. We'll see if we can get through it. Okay. The Romans, Monogamy Law, Chapter 3 of the Holy Priesthood, Volume 4, pages 14 through 22. So, 8 pages. I think we can do that in 2 hours. Although monogamy goes back to the beginning of time, specific laws enforcing it go back only about 2,500 years ago in the Roman Empire. The data and the origin of the first settlement on the present site of Rome are obscure, although legends name Romulus as the city's founder in 753 BC, sometime during the 8th century BC, various tribes that had lived on the original seven hills were united under the rule of Etruscan kings, who remained dominant until late in the 6th century BC, when the Romans overthrew the Etruscan rule. Hold on here. I forgot to open up the chat room. So I'm going to do that right now, as soon as I can, as soon as it works. But at the mercy of the computer here. Okay, there it goes. All right, chat room's open. Rome developed as the capital of one of the ancient world's largest and most prosperous empires, and quote, American People's Encyclopedia, Volume 16, page 148. And so did their laws, notably those regulating and restricting monogamy within their empire. The supposed original founders of Rome were Romulus and Remus, twins who started the city on the Palatine Hill. The early Roman settlers were a tribe of outlaws, murderers, and society rejects who made their living by plunder and robbery. The seven hills of Rome became their hideout and were a perfect place to settle, as the communities they plundered found it difficult to locate them or to penetrate their defenses. But as these laws began to increase in number and wealth, they realized there was something missing: women. To solve this problem, they decided to kidnap some of the nearby community called the Sabians. So they planned a special festival to provide the opportunity to carry out their plan. The famous rape of the Sabians occurred during this period of legendary history. Romulus, having found it difficult to obtain wives for his followers, who were rather notorious as runaways and malefactors, invited the Sabians to a feast and games. During the games, the garrison of the Palatine seized the unsuspecting and unprotected Sabian women, whom they carried off to be their wives. And quote, American's People Encyclopedia, Volume 16, page 232. Such acts of kidnapping and rape were enough to start a war, which they did, but there was an ameliorating factor. I'm going to see what that word means. Go to definition here. All right, how do we even say it? Ameliorate. And it's a verb. Any move that ameliorates the situation is welcome. Improve makes better. To enhance, help, benefit, boost, raise, amend, refine, reform, relieve, ease, mitigate, retrieve, rectify, to right, put right, set right, put to rights, sort out, clear up. So we're learning all the fun stuff. Let's see here. The informal definition is to tweak or to patch up, and the antonyms worsen or leave alone. That's interesting. So it's ameliorate. Cool. Okay. Well, let's see. But there was an ameliorating factor which soon resulted in a peace agreement. It came from the women themselves. Because of these pleadings, the king of the Sabian, Titus Tatius, made an alliance with Romulus. The ensuing war between Romulus and the Sabians was the Romans, and the Sabians joined into one community. And that comes from the same encyclopedia, volume 16, page 149. This ended the hostilities that broke out after the rape of the Sabian woman by Romulus and his followers. Roman and her empire by Cunliffe, page 49. One of the rules of the Roman The Roman and brigand. The Roman brigand. They were robbed by the brigands, bandits, robbers, outlaws, ruffians, desperados, plunderers. Okay. One of the rules of the Roman outlaws, why can't you just say outlaws? That's funny. Was that no man would be allowed to have more than one wife because the limited number of women. They assume this would be a factor in stopping any further wars or kidnappings. Brigham Young commented on this incident. And we're on page 16 for those of you reading along. Crazy Cajun. That is kind of funny. Somebody's chatting in the chat room, but doesn't have to deal with what we're talking about today. So anyway, we're on page 16 for those of you who are reading along. Just ask yourselves, historians, when was monogamy introduced on the face of the earth? When those buccaneers who settled on the peninsula where Rome now stands could not steal women enough to have two or three pieces, two or three wives, basically. Hold on here. I'm going to just read it. When the JH showed up at my Jehovah's Witnesses, I guess, I met them at the door with a shotgun. After they rang my doorbell, I, with a shotgun, said, "What the H do you want?" Never saw so many middle-aged people run so fast. It was funny. Oh, this guy is giving us crap. Whatever, I'm going to ignore him. So, let's see here. And now I've lost my place, and I don't even know why. Okay, we're going to read something about what Brigham... Okay, just ask yourselves, historians, when was monogamy introduced on the face of the earth? When those buccaneers who settled on the peninsula where Rome now stands could not steal women enough to have two or three apiece, they passed a law that a man should have but one woman, and this started monogamy and the downfall of the plurality system. In the days of Jesus, Rome, having dominion over Jerusalem, they carried out their doctrine more or less. This was the rise, start, and foundation of the doctrine of monogamy, and never till then was there a law passed that we have any knowledge of that. That a man should have but one wife. Journal of Discourses, volume 12, page 261. The origins of the law of monogamy. The rape of the Sabian woman by the Romans, courtesy of Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada. I guess there's a picture that I'm not seeing here because I'm reading it online. The city of Rome prospered greatly from their stealing, pillaging, and conquering of other tribes and nations. Individuals and communities began to envy their power and wealth and were willing to join in with them. One of the leaders of the Sabians, Attis Clausius, was so eager for a share of Roman amenities that with the agreement of its authorities and presumably of its Latin allies as well, he moved his whole clan of 4,000 or more relatives and supporters to Roman territory, where he settled them and became the founders of Rome's great Claudian race, or clan. And this was about 505 BC. The History of Rome by Michael Grant, page 46. This may not be such a significant fact of history other than it shows the influx of people that gradually assimilated themselves into and under the political and religious systems of the Roman, including monogamy. As Rome increased in size and power, the law of monogamy continued along with it, not as a religious law, but as a civil and governmental edict, and a very strict one at that. However, divorce was easy. In some cases, all that was necessary was to say, "I divorce thee, I divorce thee, I divorce thee," and it became official. It's like, there's no place like home, there's no place like home, there's no place like home. Thus came the strict law of monogamy and the simple law of divorce. From the book History and Philosophy of Marriage, Polygamy and Monogamy Compared, published in 1869 by the Reverend James Campbell, came a very interesting record of legal origins of monogamy. He, too, attributes the dating of the first order to give some, hold on here. Oh, my wife is in the room. She doesn't call into the show. She just comes in the room. This food? Are you leaving me? How dare you? You can't just wait until the radio show's over with?
No, I already have to drive 2 hours from right now. I would like to get there before midnight.
Okay, I'll be right back, everyone. Okay, I was gone for a minute. My wife is actually going to a friend's house for the weekend. Well, just for tonight. And I'm working tonight, so it's fine. Anyway, but she's getting ready to leave right now. Yeah, also, we have a car that fits two girls, a baby, and a 12-year-old girl. So my son is staying home. We call him the butler. Like, Eric, bring me the thing. He's 15. Anyway, so I just had to talk with my wife before she left. So, all right, we're on page 18 of Holy Priesthood, Volume 4. In order to give just some conception of Roman monogamy, at that time, when it first came in contact with Christianity, and when it began to impose its social system upon other nations of Europe, for these two events are quite synchronous. I will now, as briefly as possible, give some account of the domestic life and manners of the six imperial Caesars who governed Rome at that period. In this account, I shall enumerate their many marriages and their numerous divorces and adoptions and state their exact relationship to each other. By this means, I hope to be able to explain the complexity of the Roman affinities, which has baffled the apprehension of so many acute and learned historians, and at the same time, to exhibit the original nature and true spirit of Roman monogamy. See pages 84 through 86. Establishing this monogamy law, enforced by governmental powers, was in reality a civil wrong. Marriages were intended to be a religious right, and governments should have nothing to do with marriages and family life, and that's the same way it is with our culture. There should be no, this should be a religious thing. Like, why is the government even getting their little claws in it? Because Satan gets his claws into everything, right? The resulting easy divorce laws were another evil of that in that particular system. Other evils soon followed, as explained by Orson Pratt, by the Apostle Orson Pratt. Since old pagan Rome and Greece, worshippers of idols passed a law confining man to one wife, there has been a great surplus of females who have had no possibility of getting or chance of getting married. You may think this a strange statement, but it is a fact that the nations were the founders of what is termed monogamy. All of the nations, with few exceptions, had followed this scriptural path of having more wives than one. These nations, however, were very powerful, and when Christianity came into them, especially the Roman nation, it had to bow to their mandates and customs. Hence, the Christians gradually adopted the monogamic system. The consequence of that was that a great many marriageable ladies of those days and all of the generations from that time to the present have not had the privilege of husbands, as the one-wife system has been established by law among the nations descended from the great Roman Empire, namely the nations of modern Europe and the American states. This law of monogamy or monogamic system laid the foundation for prostitution and the evils and disease of the most revolting nature and character under which modern Christendom groans. For as God has implanted for a wise purpose certain feelings in the breasts of females as well as in the males, the gratification of which is necessary to health and happiness, and which can only be accomplished legitimately in the marriage state. Myriads of those who have been deprived of privilege of entering that state rather than being deprived of the gratification of those feelings altogether have in despair given way to wickedness and licentiousness. Hence, the whoredoms and prostitution among the nations of the earth where the mother of harlots has her seat. Journal of Discourses, Volume 13, page 194 and 195. And see, I know people that have never been married in the LDS church because they're waiting for a good guy, and then now they're in their 50s and their 60s, and they've just been single women their whole lives. Like, they've known plenty of good men that would have made great husbands, but they were already taken by somebody else. And I don't know if you know this or not, but there's actually a great deal of more active women in the LDS church than there are men. If you go into any singles ward, you'll always find more women than men. And you know, some of the guys are there just because they want to date. Some of the girls are there just because they want to date too, right? Like, I've ran into that where people are like, they don't really believe in Mormonism, but it's a social thing, so they go, you know, to the singles wards. But like in the adult singles wards, not the young adult ones, but the adult ones, 31 plus, it's a flipping meat market. There's a ton of women and a bunch of creepy old dudes. that have already failed at marriage, you know, once or twice or three times or more, whatever, you know, and they're back in there looking for some somebody else to try to have a life with and ruin. So one of my friends in Germany, you know, she's a little bit older. She's still a virgin. And when I say a little bit older, I think she's in her mid to late 50s. She wanted children, but there was no eligible bachelor that she can have children with. And now she's a single older woman. So my ex-wife, she has never gotten remarried. She can't find a decent person to marry her. You know, we'd probably still be married if she wasn't throwing a fit and calling the cops on me because she wanted me to. She got mad at me because I went to, I did my laundry on a Sunday, which was the only day that I had to do my laundry. And we had clothes lines to hang the clothes up in the basement for me to dry my laundry. And then I would go back to work. I drove a coal truck back then too, back in 2006. And she could go to her job because they needed her at the job that she went to. And then when she came home, she freaked out because I did my laundry on the only day that I had off. So she calls the cops on me because she wants me to get kicked out of the house that we're living in because she's throwing this ridiculous fit. And she said that I hit her. Now, they had to drop the charges because there was no marks. There was no evidence because I didn't hit her. She just made it up. And I was like, we're done. Oh, you throw a fit and call the cops on me because you are throwing a fit over something so stupid. We're done. And I told her I wanted a divorce. And that was the point where I was like, nope, we're done. I mean, I'm just done. So anyway, she was married to me. We never had any children. She really wanted children. She really wanted a family. She's now in 40, I think. And no children, no marriage, no engagements, no serious boyfriends. And the only reason I know that is because I still love her and I want the best for her and I pray for her and I want her to meet somebody to be happy with. And occasionally I will cyber stalk her with fake profiles just to see what she's doing and how she is. Because I do care, but I do love this woman. But the behavior, I'm not going to be with somebody who calls the cops and accuses me of things just so she can get me to leave property that I am paying for with my job. She did not work. In fact, when we got married, she was actually living in her car, but going to school, university, because she couldn't. She took so many classes. I don't know why. I have no idea why. She had Asperger's and common sense. In fact, because of my experience with her Asperger's, when I found out my son had Asperger's, I actually cried because they're hard to deal with. But I don't know. 15 years later, she's still single. You know, but she wouldn't be single if she met a good guy who was already married, whose wife would say, you know, I want you to be part of our family. My husband is a really good man. he's not going to be this deceitful person, you know, like my mom. She married guys that weren't all really great until they got, or she married them, and then they turned into these monsters, and they were monsters the whole time. They just had a mask on, you know. But if women had the opportunity, like my wife would tell you my faults, my weaknesses, but also my strengths, and tell you that I am actually a good husband and father. If she met a woman that she felt comfortable with, who wanted a family but was single and really wanted a family, she would actually tell them that I would be a good possibility for them to be married to. We've discussed that. My wife has actually brought a couple of different women to my attention. Excuse me, but things didn't work out. And I'm not really interested in living in polygamy anyway, but if it worked out, then yeah, I would be okay with it. And if God gave his sanction for it, I would absolutely be okay with it, which he does. He actually gave us, stuff in the Torah about how to live it. So if it's such a horrible sin as some idiots have supposed, I'm sorry if I called you an idiot, but you are if you think that polygamy is a sin, I don't even know what to say to you. So anyway, I'll start reading again before I sit here and insult everyone. Historian Henry Sheldon clearly saw the effects springing from the monogamic system. I'm going to see how you say that right. No definition found. Ogden, are you making words up? The system of monogamy or the monogamic system? Monogamic? All right. System of marriage in both the early and later years of the Roman Empire including the same results with Christianity. He stated that the unmasking of marriage was about as common as their making. He gave examples of how common divorce became. Quote, see scrupulous divorced his wife because she had gone unveiled upon the street. Q. Anticus Vetus divorced his wife because she had spoken openly and familiarly to a freed woman. P. Sempronius Sophius, I guess I'm saying this right, sent his wife away because she had gone to play without his knowledge. Aemilius Paulus, the conqueror of Perseus, sent his wife away without assigning any cause at all, and how was it among the contemporaries of Cicero? He himself separated from his first wife in order to take a wealthier one. From his second, because she did not seem sufficiently afflicted over the death of his daughter, so he got rid of her for that. Cato, with all his moral strictness, divorced his first spouse, Attilia, who had borne him two children and delivered over his second wife, Marcia, with her approval of her father to get a friend, Hortensius, after whose death he married her again. Pompey put away his wife, Antistria, in order to make family connections with Celia, and took his stepdaughter, Aemilia, who, however, had to be first separated from her husband, Glabrio, by whom she was with child. After her death, he took Mucia, who he also divorced in order to marry Caesar's daughter, Julia. On their side, women separated themselves from husbands without any cause except their mates, their mere pleasure. In fine, it was not altogether hyperbole when Seneca spoke of a noble woman as reckoning their years by their successive husbands rather than by the number of the consuls. History of the Christian Church, Henry Sheldon, Volume 1, page 29 and 30. Brigham Young confirmed this as a wicked system. Quote, "Those who are acquainted with the history of the world are not ignorant that polygamy has always been the general rule and monogamy the exception. Since the founding of the Roman Empire, monogamy has prevailed more extensively than in times previous to that." You know, I was thinking about something earlier and I didn't bring it up. So during times of war, Australia had big old war called World War II, and there weren't a lot of guys who were living, I think it was World War II. There was a lot of guys, like ratio of like 4 to 1 man, 4 women to 1 man or 10 to whatever it was. So then you've got a ton of single females that want males, that want families, because actually that's more important than anything else. Like, the husband is important as the provider, but women with natural affections want children and want families, and they want to be taken care of. And if there's not enough men to go around, then they don't get their desires and they live their whole lives single, which is sad. It's really sad. The founders of that ancient empire were robbers and women stealers and made laws favoring monogamy in consequence of the scarcity of women among them. And hence this monogamic system, which now prevails throughout all of Christendom and which has been so fruitful a source of prostitution and whoredom throughout all the Christian monogamic cities of the old and new world, until rottenness and decay are at the root of their institutions, both national and religious. Journal of Discourses, Volume 11, page 127 and 128. One of the first evils that came from the Roman monogamy laws was the surplus women resulting from all the Roman soldiers that were killed in battle. They would have little or no chance of getting married at all. This was the beginning of their problems, which resulted in such evils as prostitution, illegitimate children, and disease. Monogamy is only one of the present customs that Christians have held over from the Romans. Some of the ceremonies in marriage are identical, and there's no definition found. Confariatio, whatever, literally eating a cake together. Oh, so when you do the whole cake thing, that actually comes from a Roman tradition. I always thought it would be fun to have a wedding cake made out of a wheel of cheese and then put frosting on it, make it look like a real cake. And then, like, soft cheese, I wouldn't want it to be hard, but when they cut into it and they take the bite, they're cutting the cheese, because a word pun, and then I'm a nerd like that. Anyway, which requires religious ceremony and was confined to the patricians. A Story of Civilization, Caesar and Christ, by Will Durant, page 69. Also after the marriage, the husband lifted her over the threshold and presented her with the keys of the house and put his neck with hers under a yoke to signify their common bond. Another part of Roman tradition was when the man placed an iron ring upon the fourth finger of the girl's left hand, because it was believed that a nerve ran thence to the heart. Oh, that's interesting. Roman women, a Britian, page 135 and 136. Not only did such marriage customs become a part of Christianity, but so did their legal, political, and religious systems. In his unusual, clear, pointed, and definitive language, Brigham Young made a simple summary of the monogamic system. Monogamy, or restrictions by law to one wife, is no part of the economy of heaven among men. Such a system was commenced by the founders of the Roman Empire. That empire was founded on the banks of the Tiber and wandering brigands. When these robbers founded the city Rome, it was evident to them that their success in attaining a balance of power with their neighbors depended on introducing females into their body politic. So they stole them from the Sabians, who were near neighbors. The scarcity of women gave existence to laws restricting one wife to one man. Rome became the mistress of the world and introduced this order of monogamy wherever her sway was acknowledged. Thus, this monogamic system of marriage, so esteemed by modern Christians as a holy sacrament and divine institution, is nothing but a system established by a set of robbers, literally. Journal of Discourses, Volume 9, page 322, and I'm the one that added literally. That wasn't Brigham Young, but that was me. All right, so that is the end of the history of the Roman Empire and monogamy. When we come back on Monday, because I'm taking a break, I'm going to work part of tonight, and then I'm going to work Sunday again after church. So, but when we come back on Monday, we'll be on page 23, which is chapter 4, and we're going to talk about the Africans and the variety of polygamy cultures in their society. So we don't have anybody in the chat room, it looks like. And we did have somebody in the chat room that was telling me about how they were, whenever Jehovah's Witnesses came on their doorstep, they would come out with a shotgun and something about Mormons. And then I just was like, oh, well, thanks for sharing with me there, mister. I appreciate it. It has nothing to do with the reading for today or Mormonism in general, but I'm glad that somebody used the chat room, because most people don't, because whatever. Maybe I do the radio show too early. That's when I have to do it. So it is what it is. Anyway, I'm going to let you guys go. And thank you for listening to the program. Like I said, we'll be back on Monday through Friday, starting at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, every day of the week. Thank you for listening to the program, everyone. Take care. God bless. And goodbye.